Maricón, güey, se la mató. You heartily welcomed Samsa without much ado. What have you done then and just paint the... Anyway, we know you are here. You're leading this team, the pack of hounds. We're going to take them, but for your sake. We normally don't do it to women, we just do it to boys, so that they can... Yeah. So for your sake, we'll just say it's fine that the boys are here. You're heartily welcomed to make a presentation here. We will give you 30 minutes to make a presentation. We will tease out your presentation for the next. I don't know who's leading the team because I have received from the, is it the general? Your CEO?
Commander.
Yeah, from the commander of the team. I've received a letter from the commander which was highlighting the issues which are at play in Samsa. So, meaning that you don't have anybody from the board? Okay, thank you very much. Without waste of time, GDG, let me give it to yourself so that you will be able to present your team from Samsa. And then you hand it over to the leader of the team to introduce the team as it is. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Teacher. I'll start from my right. It's Walter, Mr. Walter Sikan, and then it's Mr. Makado, and then Mr. Sohdulai, and then it's the children. It's the CFO.
She said from her right.
Chair and members, my name is Chido Hongwe, I'm the CFO. And I represent Chair members, my name is Sobhanji Dilai, I'm the Chief Operating Officer.
Honorable Chair, members, my name is Collins Makado, I am Head of Strategy at Samsa.
Honorable Chair, my name is Walter Simakami, Senior Manager under Strategy. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Welcome. I'm going to request the COO. Who just fresh from Indonesia. He requested that he will be delayed because he was in transit from Indonesia. I hope you represented as well there to give us a presentation. Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Chair, Honorable Member. The CEO of Samsa has already tendered us. Apologies, but just for the record, it was part of the presidential visit to Indonesia. And think the situation with the board has been clarified with the chair, so I hope the committee would accept some sort of apologies in that regard. We're going to very quickly, we've been given half an hour to go through our 5-year strategic plan. Honorable Chair, could I just mention that when we started putting the plan together, we still had the board towards the back end of last year. And in fact, the board was still fully constituted when we did the board strategic session, right up until we had the first draft of the plan. It is only towards the back end, which was beginning of the year, where the board was subsequently hung. So we'll go through the presentation now. Could I just also mention to the members that in fact on the Sunset Executive we do have ladies. One is the head of communications, executive head, as well as the other one, which is the technical function, Center for Maritime Excellence. It's actually a lady. They just don't. Could I also mention that in the business, we're in the position of finalizing two more ladies to join the executive. One is the head of HR, as well as the one will be the head of finance, and they'll be joining within the next. So during our next appearance, there'll at least be one lady as head of as CFO. Thank you. Our presentation will deal with the SAMHSA overview, the challenges and opportunities. We took time to draw the alignment between the National Development Plan, particularly in the context of PAKISA and the President's 9-point plan coming out of the State of the Nation address, as well as the COT imperatives, so that the relevance of our plan can be traced all the way to governance program, as well as then we'll just deal with the strategic goals, objectives, and program. Madam Chair, the basis for the work that we are doing is based on this government's work when we first took power in 1996. We undertook what was then the National Transport Policy. And the maritime chapter of that policy sees the grand vision of South Africa's transport in its entirety as to support government strategies for sustainable socio-economic development. That maritime chapter dealt with issues of maritime awareness in 1996, still relevant today. It dealt with issues of ensuring the fostering of economic environment for the maritime transport industry. That was going to enable this transport industry to compete with other nations, which becomes very important when you consider who we trade with amongst the nations. And there was an issue of the realization then of the need for the transport sector, as it were, to release the full potential of that industry, as well as the modernization of the South Africa's Maritime Shipping Administration. Now, subsequent to that, in 1998, SAMHSA was formed, and it had three mandates. The first one was to ensure the safety of life and property at sea. The second one, to prevent and combat pollution. And the third one, to promote South Africa's maritime interests. And so you can trace back the mandate. Now, our vision in terms of the strategic plan that we developed end of last year to be the authority championing South Africa's global maritime ambition. And our mission statement is to ensure maritime safety and environmental protection while promoting South Africa's maritime interests, developing and positioning this country as an international maritime center. Now, why that becomes important is that if you look in Africa, we are considered an essential partner from a maritime point of view because we are at the junction where East meets West. It becomes important when considering that traditionally all trade usually went from East to West. Now you've got a great deal of oil explorations in particular that comes from the Gulf in the West Coast going to China, and we'll demonstrate why that becomes important process. Now, our values that drive the organization, we call it the D-Ethics, because we have to look into issues of diversity, and we've had to be a very enterprising organization to the extent that there is no rule book that we inherited. When we said we want to promote South Africa's maritime interest, we didn't have a rule book, so we had to be very, very enterprising, characterized by teamwork, high performance, integrity, and to try and become a caring organization that looks and takes seriously issues of sustainability. Now, our internal analysis, when we look at our strengths, we consider Zamsa to be a very strong brand with a strong reputation, particularly in the traditional area of safety and environmental protection. We thought we could use that to build on, not have the committee and the government in news for all the things that we didn't do. It's one of the incidents that we've had to manage them very expeditiously and professionally. So we thought that is a very good base to build from. We do have a weakness because we have an aging workforce, particularly on the highly technical staff that we have. We do have a training program, and we'll demonstrate later, and it has started producing the results. However, we still have a gap in skills, and we've got a plan to bridge that gap. We don't have a ship registry, which is one big weakness. Of the 300 million tons of cargo that we handle, none of that is moved on South African ships today. Until recently, we have been engaging in upgrading our ICT infrastructure for our internal purposes, but mainly to help us monitor our coastline. And our opportunities, the big one, for the first time, Madam Chair, we had the maritime economy mentioned in the State of the Nation address, which was a very good relief to us, and mentioned in the context of Operation Pakisa. But even in the African continent, there's been a very big move realizing the potential of the maritime industry, and it can be attested to by the adoption of the Integrated African Maritime Strategy, we call it AIMS 2050. And there is an opportunity of implementing the decided protocol on transport and meteorology. And so we do have a whole lot of opportunities that we thought could help us, firstly to address the whole issue of national interest, but mainly to strengthen our points, our mandates of safety and environmental protection. Under the threat, we still continue to have the ratification of legislation. This becomes quite important when we are speaking to people to come and register their ships in the country. And there's the ever-present threat arising because we are where we are in South Africa. That's where East meets West. So there's always a very big risk of two tankers colliding at the narrowest point, we call it the Akalar Corner. But the biggest issue, Honorable Chair and members, is still the lack of awareness and lack of potential that this industry can give, particularly from the provinces. We're grappling to get the provinces' uptake of the maritime economy, as it were. Even when you go, we spend a lot of time in KZN, obviously, Eastern Cape, even more time in the Northern Cape, but the uptake, believe it or not, Madam Chair, is more in Mpumalanga and Limpopo, Gauteng, more than the coastal provinces, but we'll get to that. Okay. Now, in the alignment of the work that we said during our planning, on the far left corner, we've got the national priorities. And then the president went and announced Operation Pakisa, or launched and announced it. And then there's Department of Transport, and then you've got our mandate. Now, the national priority of government, and I think too, is to have an efficient, effective, and development oriented public service. Now, that's not quite well captured in Pakistan. We couldn't find an interpretation, but under the OT strategic goals, one of those goals is to have effective and efficient management and support. And our strategic goal is to have a highly competent maritime authority, and to try to have excellence in service delivery. And then the government has the safety and security mandate, where we're saying as government, all people in South Africa are and they feel safe. And if you track it down, the Operation Pakistan envisaged a lab that was called Maritime Protection and Governance Lab. And the department in itself has a goal of a transport sector that is safe and secure. And under the SAMSA mandate, we're given a mandate of ensuring the safety of life and property at sea. And we've got another mandate of ensuring the administration of inland small vessel regulations, which talks to the safety of on inland waters, as well as the maritime security regulations. There is something that we call the ISTS code that we need to oversee. And then our strategic goals to meet that mandate. We've got one very big goal of clean seas, safer people and property in South Africa's maritime transport environment. And then if you keep going on the national government imperatives, create a better South Africa and contribute to a better and safer Africa. Again, that is all talking to issues of promotion of Republic's maritime interests. And we said we would need to have an orderly and well-governed maritime sector. And so we go down like that, maybe just to pick up the most important one so that we don't go through the whole document. The one maybe of increased contribution to job creation, which is a departmental goal. And with us, there is a very big imperative of developing South African seafarers to compete in the world environment. And maybe again in the light of job creation, that offshore oil and gas laboratory of Pagisa creates a very big opportunity for industrialization, and we shall demonstrate later what we mean by that. So, now coming to Operation Pakistan in itself, there was a study on the blue economy, as it was called back then, and it came out with 9 areas, and of the 9 areas, Operation Pakistan focused on 4, to the extent that the balance of those areas was felt that there was no radical issue that needed to be addressed there. So those 4 areas became the marine manufacturing and transportation, the offshore oil and gas, the aquaculture distinct from fisheries, and the marine protection services. Now, the SAMSA program on maritime includes all 9 areas over and above the 4 Pakistan areas. So we've got a fuller articulated maritime development program which comprises of all 9 areas. But for Pakistan, we executing some of the areas, in some of the areas, supporting in other areas, we provide research in the balance of the area. So we are present in all 9 areas, and we've done work in each one of the 9 areas. Now, with regard to the strategic plan which we are here to present today, Honorable Chair, the first strategic outcome in the 5-year period under review is to have a highly competent maritime authority and to be excellent in maritime service delivery by 2020, and to excel in our mandate of cleaner seas to save lives and property in South Africa's maritime transport environment, as well as develop, transform, and job creating maritime sector by 2020. Now that's the PAGISA output. We've interpreted all that PAGISA work into our program so that we don't, at least we deliver it as part of our doing the work. As well as a competent, supported, and globally competitive South African CIPERA. Now, under goal one, to be a highly competent maritime authority, the outcomes there will be a skilled, competent sample staff, which is an internally looking measure, and optimally resourced authority. Now, the financial part thereof, we're going to be coming back to the committee later on in the year. We're engaging in some work with the Department of Transport. I think CC has left the room, but we're working with him on that one. And the best practice corporate governance, we try and benchmark where we are in terms of best practice so that we continuously improve. And the three critical issues internally is the supply chain management, because that's where all our audit issues come from. The ICT system, that's where the bulk of our efficiencies are going to come from, as well as our risk management. And then lastly, the long-term financial sustainability. Now the program to support that goal is all the internal projects that comprise of that program. It's the IT hardware infrastructure development, and we've been doing a lot of work in that regard. To implement some sort of human capital development, that is a very big issue given the age profile of particularly our technical staff and every critical resource that we have. The long-term financial sustainability strategy, that becomes quite important, because when we interpreted the mandate that we have against our funding revenue sources, we found that there is a great deal of realignment required, even the tariffing. For instance, another member, to pay for salvage work, we get our money from the Department of Transport. We administer what we call the salvage tax. But if we should intervene when a ship causes pollution and the owner runs away or they are bankrupt, we are forced to stand next to that pier. And we thought that there is a way that industry in general should pay for all the risk management and risk cover for the country. And then there is the development and implementation of some sort of knowledge management system that becomes quite important given the succession planning that we require. We're having a big exodus of skills, and those skills that have been there for the last 20, 30 years, they're dealing with a lot of skill and knowledge, which we've had to envisage programs to capture that. And then there is the enterprise corporate governance, compliance, and risk management, which are the ever-present issues that we need to deal with. Yeah. And then, I can skip that one. Then under goal three, which is the core of our existence, because we felt that if we don't manage this area, then everything else becomes a much bigger problem for us. This is, we needed to ensure a reduced risk of shipping incidents and accidents. A reduced risk of boating incident as distinct from shipping, as well as fishing incidents. Now, how we approach that differently, because it's three different types of stakeholders that we need to do different things. And then the managing the risk of loss of life, as well as the maritime security, as well as to ensure an overall governance of the maritime environment. Now, under that, you comes the safety program, which has elements of search and rescue quite critical. Maybe fishing areas very critical, because there's a great deal of loss of life of fishers, which we are turning around. And safe boating, maybe then the integrated marine protection and ocean governance initiatives, particularly those elements that are coming from Operation Parties. And the reason honorable members that becomes important is that's where the integration has to happen. A lot of work happens within DAF, a lot of work happens within SAMHSA, some work happens within environmental affairs. So Operation Parties gave us a very good tool to integrate, and that's why we find ourselves quite central to that. And that is our biggest spend. That's where all our money, or at least more than 70%, give or take, of our money is going to go to. Now, under the same goal, Program 4, there's the issue of maritime security. Now, similar to the point that was made by Civil Aviation Authority, there's quite a few authorities that are involved in that space, and we just got one of them. However, we've installed one center in Cape Town, and I do know that the good committee has had a visit there, and that's our central operations center, which still requires a great deal of investment. But we're anchoring that whole maritime security program there, because the whole issue of vigilance at sea and then monitoring and intervention getting driven from one place is going to be quite critical. And then the Maritime Environmental Protection and Climate Change Program. This is largely, from our point of view, driven by an international protocol. And South Africa is a member of the IMO via the Department of Transport and SAMHSA, where the technical advisors to the Department of Transport. And we must come back and implement most of those protocols when we receive them. And then with regards to the maritime governance program, this is the whole area where international conventions must be domesticated into South African law and then must be implemented, and that's where we come in. Now, the whole issue of compliance with applicable national laws, and that South Africa adheres to the relevant regional, continental, and international instruments. This is where we need the skills, the surveyors, and everybody else to go and implement. And then we've got those instruments that are of an enabling manner, like the African Maritime Charter, the AIMS strategy, I don't see it here, particularly in the country, the National Maritime Transport Policy, as well as all the legislation and policies and everything else. This is where the core of our work happens. Now, the goal 4 is a developing, transforming, and job creation maritime sector, and this is where we needed to spend more time if we had. Because this is where the bulk of operation, this is one of two areas which contain Operation Pakisa. Now, the strategic objective there is effectively supported job creation initiatives in the maritime sector through partnerships with international shipping line and crewing agencies. If I could make an example, honorable members, we've got now 13 companies that we've got MOUs with that employ all the seafarers that we produce internationally. Of the National Cadet Ship Program, we've produced over 600 of those teams, and more than 60% of them are working somewhere in the world internationally. And it is as a result of those partnerships that we get out of that area. The other one, the globally competitive and attractive South African ship registry. This is where the issue of carrying South African goods on South African ships is going to happen. It's taking us a great deal of time, but it's been a work in progress, and Operation Pakisa again has just given us a whole lot of tools to integrate better with Department of Mineral Resources, Treasury, etc., to make sure that that one happens. And then there is a much bigger issue, that issue of BEE Council, that whole BEE plan. required there to ensure that there's a great deal of transformation, both to South Africanize, as we normally call it, but to make sure that we introduce particularly women and previously disadvantaged individuals in that area. And then there is the general growth and development of the maritime sector across the entire value chain. Now, the program there to support all those goals, as we were saying, it's in particular the meaningful participation of deaf youth women and entrepreneurs and then all the other aspirant previously disadvantaged people, and maybe the improvements that we need to do to ensure an efficient registry, as we normally call it, you know, whether it is the electronic ship registration system or technical development of proposed amendments, because shipping will only come if our legislation is up to date. That's where the legislation becomes a disincentive to the to the shipping industry. And then the last issue really that you wanted to be talking to is the competent, supported, and globally competitive South African difference. And the reason we're saying that, as we're demonstrating earlier, Honorable Chairperson, the PAKISA objective as a number is to produce at least 720 officers per year, as well as 1,200 ratings, which is the semi-skilled worker. But when fully developed and when in full production, only 40% of those people will be working in the country. The rest of them will be working internationally. And we've used the Filipino model. The Philippines, they derive more than 20% of their GDP through the export of skills. And we thought there's a very good environment, there's a very good chance that we can achieve that. And below there are all the issues that we have to make sure that we do in order for us to achieve that goal, whether it is to increase the production itself, to make sure that our system allows us to stay on what we call the IMO whitelist, or any other intervention that we have to do. That's all the initiatives that you must do to support. Now, I'm going to ask my colleague to give us the actual program for the performance indicators for 2015-2016.
Thank you, Chair. I'll run quite quickly past the indicators themselves, because the COO has, by and large, covered a lot of these areas. But the first objective is to improve the level of organizational resources and capabilities from level 3 to level 5. What we use is what we call an organizational capability maturity model, which is a Likert scale model that assesses the organization between a 1 and a 5. One being the lowest and 5 being the highest. So what we want to do is to move towards the 5, which is an excellent rating. To do that, some of the indicators that we'll focus on is the level achieved on Sampler's long-term financial sustainability strategy. We are targeting a level 4 right at the far end, which is at the end of 2017-2018. But in the next year, we want to start to stabilize ourselves in that level 4. This includes financial management systems themselves, the capacity to fund our interventions, and so on. So this long-term financial sustainability will have a whole lot of elements to it. Secondly, is an audit opinion achieved on the Auditor General's report. Our target is to have an unqualified audit with no matters of emphasis. Last year we had some matters of emphasis, and these are the areas that we're working towards addressing. The third indicator is level achieved on the SAMHSA processes capability maturity model. This is really in terms of the processes within SAMHSA to optimize them, to make them more efficient and effective in how we deliver our work. And the fourth one is level of contribution achieved on the BEE scorecard. We are wanting to move towards the level 3. The last assessment was that we're on level 2 and we're moving towards level 4. Level 4, we're moving towards the level 3. The second objective is to improve the quality of SAMHSA services and products to our stakeholders from good to excellent based on that same scale. First indicator is rating achieved on stakeholder satisfaction survey. Last year we didn't run the survey, so we're running it on a 2-year basis because it just makes for financially big sense, but also we don't want to have what we call stakeholder too many surveys being run with our stakeholders, so we want to do it on a 2-year basis. We want to achieve a 75% rating on the stakeholder survey, and begin to implement initiatives to address the gaps that have been identified in the 2014-2015 survey. Secondly, percentage of registered customer complaints that have been attended to, and the target there is 100%. We use an electronic system to track that. 3.1, to reduce the incidence of preventable marine casualties in South African waters over the period 2015-2020. And here we're focusing on preventable marine casualties in South African waters successfully managed, as opposed to all the casualties. The very nature of maritime is that it is high risk, it's out in the water, so we can't prevent everything from happening, but where it is preventable, that's where we are focused on. Marine Protection and Governance Lab initiatives supported and implemented. This is clearly focused on Operation Pakisa initiatives, some initiatives under each of the labs that have been spoken about earlier have specific initiatives or specific activities that SAMHSA needs to actually execute. So this is going to be focusing on those specific ones and not the whole lab. So the target is provide integrated access to long-range integrated tracking system and AIS. So this is to do with an initiative that wants to integrate the ability of all agencies to view Earth observing data or Earth observing capabilities and use those capabilities in an integrated way. The third one is port state inspections. This is largely dependent on our ability to have inspectors or surveyors at the right level to be able to increase our capacity to do inspections. Currently, we've been able to increase slowly and not at a rapid level that we would have wanted to have more of these port state inspectors to inspect vessels. But over the long term, we see our ability to do that based on the long-term development of capability internally that the COO spoke about. So through our human capital development program, we should have more people coming up that are able to do these surveys. 3.2, which is to contribute to the mitigation of maritime security risk between 2015 and 2020. This will focus on maritime security incidents attributable to inadequate processing of pre-arrival notifications. We don't necessarily get involved in the entirety of the process, so this is specific to the work that SAMHSA actually does. So I would say that the indicator wants to make sure that we do what we need to do very well, and that it doesn't have negative consequences in terms of the whole process. Percentage availability of maritime domain awareness systems. This is really looking at uptime of systems because at our MRCC, which is our the center where we are able to see the Sea-Watch, the center for Sea-Watch, is to make sure that the systems that we're investing in are available the majority of time when vessels are out there. Our appetite, or not even just appetite, but our tolerance level really is the 5% that in the year, you might have 5% of the time when the systems are not available. But at 95% level, which is a good practice globally, I think, based on what we've seen, as a good indicator of how well we are providing the service to shipping industry. Just on the next one, which is to reduce the incidence of preventable marine casualties in South African waters over the period, initiatives implemented to enhance marine pollution combating capabilities. The target is to prepare a detailed capability plan for earth observation technology and integrate into the capability roadmap under Initiative 6. This is Initiative 6 of Operation Pakisa. It's something that we are needing to do ourselves. Percentage of maritime pollution incidents that have been successfully managed, and we would like to manage 100% of those effectively. Third one is percentage of vessels found to be polluting that have been successfully held accountable, to make sure that all ships that are found to be polluting, that are, they are held accountable for such polluting. So the target is 100% of those ships. 3.4 relates to the legislative environment, to strengthen governance of South Africa's maritime domain from developing to a level 5, which is really an excellent level. This is based on targeted legal instruments that have been submitted to the Department of Transport for processing and approval. This is not necessarily that we are the ones that see ourselves drafting and putting together the legislation itself, but it's the technical support that we provide to the Department of Transport. And a mechanism has already been set with the Department of Transport, which is a legislative review committee, which will then process these pieces of legislation. This is also in alignment with the Operation Pakisa aspirations and specific initiatives under the Marine Protection and Governance Act. The next one is to support and facilitate the achievement of the Oceans Economy Development Program, which is Operation Pakisa. Maritime Industry Development Initiative supported and implemented against the plan. And this is just focusing on those initiatives that are specific to SAMHSA that SAMHSA is accountable for, so that SAMHSA does deliver on those ones. So to deliver Initiative 18 under the MTM Operations Lab, which is the Marine Transport and Manufacturing Lab. 5.1 is to improve the quality of South Africa's maritime education and training system. The indicator is the status achieved on the IMO whitelist. We want to remain on the whitelist, which is an indicator of how well we are managing the training system. Percentage of eligible training institutions audited for compliance and reaccreditation. We accredit all training institutions in relation to maritime to make sure that they are of a high quality. And lastly, the level of quality maritime education training system. We want to begin to have a process of across the various institutions that are there in the country to be able to move towards an excellent level of, to the level of 5. I'll stop at this point. These are just some of the indicators. I've just run through them quickly, but they reinforce the type of initiatives that we are targeting, and I'll head over to the CFO to just take us through the financial aspect.
Excuse me, CFO.
Thank you, Chair. I'll quickly run through the financials. Chair, if we look at the financial picture there, it generally depicts that we've had our fair share of financial difficulties, mainly due to the fact that we've not been able to adjust our tariffs for much of the past 5 financial years. But Chair, the major challenges that we've been having have actually been surrounding the areas of financing our core business, because it up to about 50% of what we send goes towards staff costs. And Chair, maritime costs in terms of labor do not come very, very cheap. So the cost of attracting people into the business continues to go high, but our revenue has remained largely stagnant. So what we have seen in the past few years has been that our revenue has remained largely the same, whereas the cost of actually financing it has actually gone up quite significantly. The other issue I've not been able to address, Chair, is the issue of capacity building in the organization. Much of our revenue goes towards operational expenditure. And then in terms of building infrastructure, we are leaving very little in terms of addressing that particular area. And the challenge, Chairperson, goes to the fact that the more the infrastructure deteriorates, then it also affects service delivery. So that is one particular area that we've been having challenges in, because a look at our figures there, it basically shows that if you look at the years going from 2014-15 up to 2017-18, we've got a balance there between operational expenditure and the revenue. So it basically means that there's nothing going towards reserves, which can then be used to finance infrastructure. And that is a cause for concern, Chairperson. One other area we've been battling with Chairperson is the issue of unfunded mandates, which we have brought to the committee a few times before. And the issue of underfunded mandates as well is one thing which has been actually been affecting us. And the committee has been to the MRMPC, which is the center we have around here in Cape Town. we are receiving about six million rand from the DOT, but the cost of running it goes about 35 million. So that's one particular area where we've been spending money, but for which we're not getting adequate funding in order to cover that. In Cape Town as well, at the same offices, we do have systems that we are running there. One which we call the LRIC, and the other one we call AIS. And they're costing us a combined amount of about 18 million rand per annum. And we don't have funding for that at all. So it has been coming from our baseline. But Chairperson, I'd like to conclude by saying it's not all gloom and doom, because we have been having initiatives to address this particular situation with the support of our shareholder department, the Department of Transport. Recently, we've been having engagement which actually led to us benchmarking our tariffs with other similar maritime administrations in the world. And we have come up with a proposal for tariffs to be revised so that we can be able to operate optimally. I'm happy to say, Chair, as we speak now, that document is before National Treasury, and we are meeting them on Thursday to try and finalize that. And hopefully by the time we're done with the meeting, we can come to an agreement that some sort of tariffs needs to be adjusted so that we can be able to align them with the cost of operating the business. And then apart from that, Chairperson, we've also agreed with the DOT that we need to come up with a new funding model for SAMHSA. And there is a parallel process running where we actually want to have a firm funding model that we can use for so many years to come. So apart from this benchmarking process, there's also a new funding model that we have to develop. And I'm sure by the end of this financial year, that process will be at an advanced stage. So Chairperson, these are the things that we have been doing in order to address the current circumstances of the organization so that we can be able to operate on a strong financial footing. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. That will be all, Chairperson, Honorable Members.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Let me welcome Honorable Ramatakana, who has been in another committee of Parliament. Do you have taken on this matter, Honorable Malawi, Honorable Sibande, Honorable Bushir? Thank you very much. Give a little bit of
No, thank you, Chairperson. I have represent or clarity simply. I want to know about the board. It's like we heard that the board, is it dissolved or paralyzed, or do we have active board which is working around operating now? Because it's like it's known there was a problem with the metal board and something. Can we update us? The other issue is the issue of the inland waters or inland camps, these inland provinces. So I think your availability and the awareness and in the inland water density is very, very poor. We only hear about some normally on coastal areas or coastal provinces. So what strategy are you going to develop to make it sure that it must also supply that there is also inland density which needs to be Germany in terms of safety of the community members? And one of the work streams of Operation Pakisa is the maritime transport and manufacturing. And it is a common knowledge that South Africa Ship Register does not have a cargo ships in it after the, I think, submarine recently deregistered. What are the initiatives in place to attract the ship owners back into our register? And do you have capacity to look at the loopholes in legislation administered by the SAMHSA?
Thank you very much. Before Honorable Sibande comes in, let me indicate that there is an interim board which the minister has put in place. The board's life span had expired, and there is an interim board. Unfortunately, as at them making a presentation here, the board was not taken to the normal process. That is why they are unable to be here.
Thank you, Chairperson. I will try to be Chairperson, you know, I wanted you to comment with our meeting last week. Everything was low. We were impressed about the process of taking us on board and everything. But nevertheless, the armed conflict, which must be addressed. You see, I was worried when you were doing the introduction in terms of the gender issue. Because if you can calculate when we were last in there and now, things look different. And then again, what is worrying me, when you are doing you are calculating people which are not yet being employed, people which are still coming. That is why. We want to be practical. This is quite an opportunity or practical. That is my main worry. Because when we they will raise the issue, that the issue of gender, that in terms of transformation, that thing that is gone. And then also, I was impressed, Chairperson, when they were, in terms of the one of the slides, when they were talking about the weaknesses in terms of the internal analysis, the weaknesses and the threats. And I don't think that is the first time to hear about some of these. When we were there, you told us. What I was expecting some of these things, the corrective measures. That what are you doing? Because you already identified the thing of aging workforce. It goes about the issue of recruitment drive. As long you are not visible, as long you don't trouble yourself in going even in inland to go and advertise yourself, that is the problem. It will stay as it is. Up until the structure collapses at all. And then also the issue, I think some of the threats which came, sometimes it was the issue of some of the people are abandoning wrecks, which are full of oil. They just come, they bring drive them towards South Africa, which is not even registered. If you see that there is a danger, you are about to be arrested, they drop things, what do you do? Because you raise the thing. I propose that you're supposed to be guiding us that what you do, because those things came when we visited there, that some of the threats are like this and this. What is my fear? The same issues came again, are coming again, while you raise those issues again. But it seems that nothing has been done since we visited there. I think there must be a difference once we visit you. And then somewhere on Goal 4, strategic objective, you spoke about the, in your implementation that you did there, you said about 18 companies. I'm not sure with those companies, because we talk about the developing of the black companies in particular. How many? Because I'm scared of one reputation. We speak about same people who were empowered some time ago, and we forget about the people who are supposed to be empowered. You see, if you can check us on board on that one. And then, as I indicated, that one, you know, another one, extra person, which is, I think some of these things that mentioned it, I didn't write a lot of things because I know that, by the way, you indicated, yes, I wanted you to emphasize the issue of registration of the ships. Somewhere you spoke about inspectors. I was not sure whether the inspectors you're talking about, it is related to the registration of the ships, because you raised a very serious point that some ships are not registered, all the staff. And then also, there is a thing which I raised earlier on. In some of these port of entries whereby some ships, they will just come and go. This is an issue that they come and go. What measures do you have in terms of monitoring? Remember, there is this international outcry, since we are members of international bodies, outcry of drugs and the like, whereby they are using ships. Sensitivity so far. I'll put the address my sister. Thank you.
Thank you, Sir President. I will not necessarily be referring to the presentation because I went through the whole document. Firstly, in terms of your threat, I think you are making a very profound statement saying your threat is the low participation of legislation. Is it the slowness by the department or is the slowness by the committee? Because it can either be the two. What did you do to ensure that this is addressed? The department not taking it as such that you are forced to write it in a public 5-year document or what? Maybe you might want to have some clarity there. The other profound statement that you made, you say there is little appreciation of the potential impact of maritime on the future of South African economy. Referring to if the government doesn't appreciate your impact on maritime, if the department doesn't appreciate, if the committee doesn't appreciate, or who doesn't just appreciate? Because it's a very profound statement for me to say this. Because it also goes in with the one that says there is a limited buy-in and participation by chief stakeholders. So I just want clarity, because if we let statements like this in a document for the next 5 coming years, it's going to cause us a problem. The other issue is that I want to know your mechanism. I can see on the papers they are very good, but practically it seems there is a problem. There was a ship that was stranded on the 5th of April 2015 in Angola at Lovisa Bay, where even the captain died from the maelstrom. I think they survived on newly mainland, I think rainwater. I think they're still living there now. So what is your role in terms of assisting them? Because they're fellow South African and they've been sending SOS messages. I know the Department of International Affairs are doing their part, but you as the custodians of our maritime, what did you do? Because they have and I can see your scope is so wide, even towards Brazil and everything, but I'm just talking about our 7 crew members, which has stranded now, and need our assistance. What did you do? The other issue that comes out from time to time in our document, it's about the regulations, the amendments, what needs to be done, and whatever. I just want you to confirm that you are raising this because the department doesn't give you a platform where you sit down and raise these issues, such that they have to come in. Because the last time we even went to come and do the oversight, Chairperson Nkuruman, these issues were still raised, you know, and complemented now by the ratification of the legislation. So I just want to know, so that we don't deal with general issues. Remember, you have to come back and account for this in your quarterly report, and then it's what will hold you accountable. So right from the beginning, we just want to find out who do that. And then also the other issue is the budget issue. The budget will never be enough. Let me just bring that to you. The budget will never be enough. Even if they can give you 50 billion maybe tomorrow, then it will never be enough. Because we've got so much things to do. I think you need to look at the funding model. Then that can assist you in the long run. Because actually you're naming the whole of the world's, you know, maritime space, if you look at the magnitude of what you're doing, you know, which will be unfundable if we really have to think about it. So maybe you have to prioritize, have your cause, you know, and others, you know, not think that you must do, but, you know, they can still be shelved, but they are the cause, that needs to be done. But also there's some contradictions somewhere where you cry about lack of skills, relevant skills and whatever, but then on the other side you come and say, no, there are so many people that were exported and working where and not. You see, so where's the balance in terms of, do you train for other people? Because then you want to even make it your core function to train, give it to other people, or what are we doing with? Also the issue of the unfunded mandate. We've been coming here talking about the unfunded mandate, and we understand what the unfunded mandate is. But given your expertise and experience, what other mechanisms have you put in place to be able to assist government to do that? Because we know that unfunded mandates is like that sheet that is in Angola. You have to rescue those people. You know, it's not something that you can put in a sub-plan or your APP to save. So what else do you have in place to ensure? Because the problem with your field is that if any incident happens, it's either people die or the maritime is destroyed, and you know, it's just catastrophic. So when you're dealing in that kind of situation, that's where you need to really manage your risk more than any other thing. Actually, must be like driven to say what if, you know, like in ATNS. In ATNS, they have a room where they call it search and rescue. You know, if anything happens, you know, where there's a flight problem or what, they just go to that room, activate everything in that room. You know, so I want to know, because I want to also qualify to say, maybe we're not on top of issues given what is happening on that ship that I'm talking about, because they've been there for almost 2 weeks, stranded our own people. The last one, Chef. I think the inland waterways. I think you came here and raised the issue of the inland waterways. I was the chief director of public transport at one stage in the department, somewhere in the book. I know that we had the inland waterways directorate, we had the strategies, we had the policies, we have even had the databases. I'm not sure how far do you go in terms of taking those resources from the province, because in some instances you don't even have to start from scratch. The baseline is there where you can work from, because coming here every time on inland waterways, throwing your hands up in there, it's not just going to help anybody, because like my colleagues are saying, whether we like it or not, it doesn't depend on us. Activities are going on in the inland waterways, and that might be activities that are not even good for our own country. So, and I know there's that information in provinces. So how far in terms of your stakeholder, as I said, you say, in terms of your participation with your key stakeholders. You know, the provinces are your key stakeholders that are custodians of the inland waterways policies and strategies and the databases. How far are you using them? Because the little resources that you have, if you can tap someone, that's what you must do, instead of, you know, it's unlikely that you'll ever get the budget that you do. Check. I've got still a lot, but let me pause here. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Can you send those to the committee secretary for to contribute to the to SAMHSA in writing? Thank you very much. Let me say to you, from me, there are two critical things that I think we need to take cognizance of. Maybe I would say it's a question. Your relationship with the Department of Health on health issues and the intelligence issues when it comes to SANDF and SAPS, because marine issues, maritime issues, you need to have a lot of work that is done intelligence-wise. How working relationship with that, obviously some of them, we can be able to tap. I know that for sure from the Department of Defense, there should be some people that you can be able to tap from that are skilled along those lines, that some you can be able to recruit deeply into SAMHSA. The last one from me is unfunded mandate have been spoken to. The financial difficulties, probably because you're under distress, I'm sure, and your colleague SOS, I wonder if the director, you have had interaction to deal with this critical thing, particularly focusing on the fact that Pakisa has come, and probably the department was not really along the line of this is the amount of money that we'll be able to put into Pakisa. You indicated last year when we visited that you would want to have a center where you'll be able to manufacture vessels, particularly focusing on the sea rescue vessels and stuff like that. But obviously, we're thinking in terms of a manufacturing industry of some kind. Is there kind of funding that will come your way for you to be able to realize this? Obviously, when you talk about issues of laboratory, I see some of the labs being mobile labs that will go in deep into the sea to can be able to do certain things. How do you work with the Department of Environmental Affairs, because it is also central in this whole thing? When you talk about marine issues, you talk about environmental issues, we're talking about pollution. But let me say to yourself that be happy, because the act that we're going to be dealing with is right here in Parliament, and we're trying to shift around so that we can be able to focus on the act, which will be able to be an enabler. Ours is just to, as a committee, to say how fast can we be able to push that act, which will be created in every environment for you to be able to operate. But the act has already arrived at the shores of Parliament. So these are the things that, as you're coming to make a presentation, probably sometimes it needs you to present to say, having this type of a thing, how can we mitigate some of the things? How can we be able to say, or even say to the committee, this is the intervention that we believe you should be able to make on our behalf? We've got the Director General here. What are the things that we believe we should be able to say? DG, come October when there is part appropriation, these are the things that you have to do in making sure that Operation Pakisa within the Department of Transport doesn't fall into cracks, but is able to be lifted up. Where do you chop, cut, and paste financially so that it is able to address some of the critical issues that you have raised? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Thanks, Honourable Members, for the question.
Before you even start, I'm going to give you like 5 to 7 minutes. Issues that you would not have answered, return to sender in writing to our committee secretary.
Thank you. Thanks. Perhaps the nature of the presentation would not have allowed us to fully articulate on the answers. I can assure this House that most of the questions being dealt with already either have been thought through and in most cases answered and visaged. Maybe the test is for the completeness of the answer, but I shall attempt to respond in detail. With regards to the relationship with other stakeholders as raised by Chair, I can confirm that there is an organization called the Border Management Agency. It comprises of intelligence, health, agriculture, all the general government stakeholders that operate in the port. We are part to that. Over and above that, SAMSA has a relationship with the South African Navy on issues. We cooperate on information transfer. The Chair will be aware that the center at Silver Mine is connected to the center at MRCC. So on issues of security in particular, we cooperate quite closely. I must mention as well that SAMSA generally does not lead in that space, because the intelligence leads However, the information generally comes from the SAMHSA systems that are installed. And that should answer the question about the ships that are leaving and that come in and out. Maybe the other issue that I think we need to respond to is the question of the stranded seafarers in Angola. We are aware of that. And in fact, DERCO is doing what they are doing under our advice. We got involved quite late because I think the seafarers there, they didn't inform, or we were not informed in time, but immediately we were aware, which was last week sometime. We contacted DERCO to the extent that they have got officers on the ground in Luanda. And I think the big issue now is facilitating to get them out of the complication of the issue that one seafarer in particular was critically ill in hospital and has subsequently passed on, unfortunately. But yes, we invoked a whole lot of international protocols. It's an unfortunate situation because they found themselves stranded in Angola, but they were on a Nigerian ship that is Nigerian owned, so it really complicated our situation. We took that up diplomatically, so there is something that we have done about that. We will follow up on the actual response as to what the status is, if the House so wishes, and then the committee wishes, and then we'll provide that update. With regards to inland waterways, when we were the questions that relate to, I would choose to deal with it as inland provinces, whether it is from an economic awareness of the maritime sector, or even the presence and safety interventions there. From a safety point of view, we have been working in close collaboration with the South African Police Service Waterway. Generally, they have a bigger footprint than we do. However, they are quite under-resourced. So in those dams that we can't reach, we generally would have spoken to them. And but they have their own capacity challenges. Now, there is one small vessels advisory committee that's led by my CPG behind me at the Department of Transport. And that seeks to increase our footprint, and it's got its initiatives. Maybe then the committee can just be updated on the activities thereof. But there is a plan to increase our footprint. And in there are the actual voters and stakeholders in that area. With regards to the unfunded mandate, I think the CFO was raising two issues that we have done there. We have said that most of the work that we do should be funded by the people that we do it for, the shipping and the boating and every other community that we support. And in that regard, the CFO was just now reporting that we've started a process of tariff review in general, or rather the method of us getting our revenue. And that's what he was saying, by the end of this financial year, we should have results from that process. And it's going to ensure that we generally don't go back to government for our funding. But the CFO was also reporting that in the interim, we have been allowed, or it is right in the process of raising our tariffs so that whilst we are working on that big tariff reform, at least we have money to operate. So we are hoping that this is the last financial year that we'll be coming to government to raise issues of unfunded mandate. Now, to answer the question from Honorable Rochelle, with regards to the balance between exporting skills versus resourcing for our strategy. The trouble with seafarer skills, and I suppose with general skills in general, is that they are long-term in nature. Now, somebody just coming out of university is of very little use to us. But our pipeline is where those people have been at sea, have obtained the highest tickets, master's tickets, and that is where we recruit from. Now the challenge is that we have not been training enough, so there is not enough of that pool out there. So it is important for us to flood the West with South African skills, because upon them having spent 15, 18 years, however long, then it gives us the pool with the skill to recruit from. So it is just the painful thing that you must do. When they qualify, honorable member, they are on their first ticket. It's like a university graduate coming out of university. But what you want out of them is a senior engineer. So in order for them to get that experience, you allow them to say there's an engineer or the navigation cadet until they sail all the way up the rank. It's like a first license pilot. If you just got a helicopter pilot, you are of no use to somebody who is Boeing pilot. Until they would have, SAA for instance, would have employed them all the way up to the top. And then if you want a surveyor, a senior surveyor of aeroplanes, that is the person that you would take. So it is important for us to flood the market out there. I hope it is clear and I can take follow-up. Madam Chair, can you allow me to just clarify? I think when... Okay. Sorry, so that's overruled. To answer the question on regulatory amendments, we reported on the we put it on our presentation to the extent that it continued to persist. I must, however, mention that lately with the interventions within the department, we've seen a committee being set to look into the regulatory issues. It's been a great deal of a stop and start. It's largely the department that must assist us in this regard. And we have every reason to believe that this time around we're going to get it right. However, to the extent that you've got legislation that dates back to 2005, 2006, that has never come through, we've decided to still keep it here until we begin ticking off those pieces of legislation. So the answer to your question, it's not this committee that's not doing it, but our committee is not sitting with the pieces of legislation, and we're working with the department to get it here. To answer the question around the little appreciation or lack of awareness, again, as I was saying earlier, where the provinces they are required to put together the provincial strategy on growth and development, and we've been working with all the provinces to make sure that there is a maritime chapter, however scant, and we have battled with many provinces. As we are saying, KZN generally have got even a maritime strategy. The Eastern Cape, it's been a big stop start. But where it poses difficulties for us is that we need the provinces to access to their communities. I'm not even saying local authorities. Certainly provinces are our delivery platform. And without them taking it up, it is very difficult for us to continue to work in those communities. Now, all our career awarenesses, we generally rotate them. We pick a province and pick a town within the province and we do our maritime awareness. But coming out of maritime awareness, we need a province with traction so that you are able to say if there are boundaries, if there's any follow-up, there is localized set up for us to work through. Maybe where this committee can help us is to preach the maritime gospel to the provinces. We are doing that already, but more voices really would assist us in this regard. To come back to the issues of those companies that you were speaking about, regarding the partnerships that you have made. Honourable Member, what we have done is that South Africa today doesn't have ships, and we're going to get to that just now. But in the absence of those ships, we still need the employment on board the ships. Now, we've signed MOUs with companies. They are not even South African. One is Canadian, one is Norwegian, and they are all scattered all over the world. I've just come from Singapore and struck a new deal there. It is that employment. And so it is international jobs, international foreign earning capabilities that you are doing in that instance where we were reporting. So there is no local emphasis whatsoever there. If you recall, I was saying that the model that you followed is the Filipino model, where you sell your skills and we'll harvest them later once they've got the capability to become our resources. But they need the experience now, and we can't get experience out of our own. But to come back to the local setup, that is why we have elsewhere another initiative that says we have to ensure that we are supporting all the EE strategies by Department of Transport by ensuring that particularly women entrepreneurs and youth and previously disadvantaged are supported. Maybe the way to demonstrate how we're doing that. The one area where it's very easy to find cargo is when Department of Mineral Resources issues mining licenses, we have asked them to make sure that as a condition of issuing that license, make sure that there is a line there that says who is going to move your iron ore from Saldanha Bay to China. So we're collaborating with the Department of Mineral Resources. And in them then saying that it has to be the health of South African presence, that's when we're selling those opportunities to the people whom we aspire to get into the industry. I hope that clarifies that point. And then the issue with the actual ship registration, again, as I was saying, what buys ships is cargo. Now we've got 300 million tons of carbon and specifically 150 million tons of mineral resources, which we have 40% claim over. So we've got here the cargo part if we can access mineral resources. The question was this, do we have capacity to address the loopholes in legislation? Honorable Member, yes, we think we do have that capacity. It is us tying up as government, and PAGISA has given us that platform. It is a matter of time. We still are going to be required to come back and report to this committee, and we're going to report on progress. My PDG is putting me under a lot of pressure as well in that regard. I think we've generally answered to most of the questions. The last one, that one relating to abandoned ships. The problem there with the abandoned ships is that international law allows ships to move. It's called the right of free access. So if you do not suspect that a ship will break down on you, there's very little you can do. International law allows them to be there. It is only when they run into trouble that we need to intervene. But international community also appreciates that fact. That is why there is an international convention on wreck removal. Because our program starts when people abandon their ships on our coastline. Because then, how do you find it? Now, that convention has just come into force. And South Africa, we are yet to ratify it. But once we ratify it, we're going to make sure that if somebody runs away and leaves their ship, we can go claim to the international insurance for money to remove the ship on our shores. So there is something that we've done against everything that we've picked up as a challenge. It's going to require us to come back and clarify these issues. and anything that continues not to be cleared shall write back to the committee. I hope that satisfies the question, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. If there's honourable member to actually question the committee has not been properly answered, you will receive a communique from the secretary which indicates what are the issues that they should be able to expand on. On that note, thank you very much for the presentation, and thank you for being so tolerant because we started an hour behind. We just want to make sure that we finish what we have been challenged to come to here. Hopefully next time when you come with the three executives women. We looking forward to seeing that. 2 minutes now, by the way.
Gracias.
Thank you, Chairperson and honorable members. It is a true pleasure for us at all times to be here as the department and the Minister of Transport. But Chairperson, I thought I must just use this opportunity to clarify some of the things that might be misinterpreted. The issue of last week's absence of the GG in the committee and the misunderstanding of their apology. I just want to indicate that in terms of my understanding and informed by the CFMA Section 49, we actually know and believe that the chairpersons and CEOs, in the absence of the chairpersons, the CEOs of the entities are the accounting officers, and they were supposed to be, or the accounting authorities, and they were supposed to come before the committee. And I want to re-emphasize what I said in one of the meetings when we met at Mark Building, that the Department and Ministry of Transport holds the Portfolio Committee in high regard, and we will never relegate our responsibility to the Portfolio Committee. So if there was a misunderstanding, we want to apologize. It is because we were informed by the PFMA and we took it literally in the way it was it is stipulated. But also, Chairperson, I know that the PLO has informed me about the concern of members of the honourable members of the committee with regards to the short notices that we give you when we invite you to activities of the department, and I would want to say that that matter will be corrected. It is not the intention of the department and the ministry, especially between myself and the deputy minister, to overlook the 7 days rule, because it is important that we understand that you also have other responsibilities and there are particular processes that you need to follow to be able to get to the point of attending whatever we will be inviting you on. We will make sure that the officials in our offices make sure that they invite you ahead of time. But also, I want to take this opportunity to thank the Portfolio Committee for the opportunity that you are presenting to us. And I would want to indicate that the fact that we will be concluding on the department and the entity's presentations of the budget to your good self, and also that on the 28th you will be finalizing on the decisions with regard to the budget, gives us ample time as the ministry to prepare for the budget speech on the 5th. And thank you very much for that. So, Chairperson, with regard to the letters that we are here about, I just want to say to you, Chairperson, that we have been able to analyze, and the CFO and DG will speak to that, the broad trajectory of the budget of the department, and have agreed that whilst we realize that our budget has been growing at almost in the 10 years it has grown by 31 billion rand, we need to now do an impact study and be able to check whether the money goes to the right places. We know we've got serious challenges with regard to the backlogs, which we raised last year and we raised again. The backlogs of the road infrastructure, the challenges we have with regard to the subsidy for the public transport operating grant that is not growing at the rate at which it would allow us to make it possible that those who render the services on our behalf can invest in the quality of the services. We know we've got challenges of the service not improving, the buses are old, they frequently break down, they are for long periods out of service, there are general delays, and the time it takes for the breakdown to be serviced, because sometimes to service an old thing repeatedly, you just keep on breaking it down even further. But also, Chairperson, looking at this growth, we've also realized that the first FA study that they did on our behalf by 2013, the household travel survey, have given us an indication that the bulk of South Africans are actually using taxis. 69% or 15 million passenger trips are done by taxis. And that is some of the things that we need to really, if we do an analysis of who do we actually subsidize, do we subsidize the operator or do we subsidize the passenger? We need to look deeper into this, and with the engagement with the taxi industry, we need to go into that particular area. But also as a department and as a government, we need to support the taxi industry. Taxi industry contributes about 40 billion rand per annum, creates more than 300,000 permanent, and I mean 600,000 permanent and 300,000 indirect jobs. So it means it is a key economy contributor, and we need to be able to support them. We need to look at how the support comes in. Support does not necessarily talk to the subsidy. It also talks to how do we, through the BEE processes, but also through interventions by DTI, make it possible, and other sector departments, that this sector can participate in the total value chain of the taxi industry. Your fuel area, your spares, your assemblies of the vehicles themselves, but also, if this be the manufacturing of this particular vehicle. So we believe that this is actually an opportunity for us to look deeper, like we've done with the revitalization of the rail industry. We need to now talk to how do we use within the framework, or better reformulate the framework of the taxi recapitalization to allow for the empowerment of the role players. The other thing, Chairperson, that we need to also look into is the issues related to the fact that the industry has also innovated. I'm sure you know that there are some centers where the taxis also have Wi-Fi. So if anything, it tells you that they are having a plan, and we need to support them. One of the key things that we are happy that it will be finalized in this year is the solar transport policy. But what we need to look at is the issue related to its funding mechanism, so that we don't have a policy that we cannot fund. So it is important that we deal with it. The other thing, Chairperson, is the PRMG, the Provincial Road Maintenance Grant. The big challenge is provinces, as we increase or we get more of the PRMG, they reduce the equitable share. And that is why you find our communities always complaining about the quality and the conditions of the roads. We have taken a decision that the PRMG must be shared 40% and 60%, 40% split for dealing with maintenance, in particular dealing with potholes. But the reality is that can only happen if provinces were putting in money to build the roads that needs to be built. If we are going to be dealing with our backlog, at the last count, we're given a figure of 197 billion rand that we would need to deal with the backlog. But you would also know that the road lifespan of a road is about 16 to 20 years. And the figures give us an indication that at the rate at which we get resources, it will take us more than 500 years. I don't know who lived 500 years to be able to get to the point where all our roads are done. But imagine if it takes 500 years, it means we would always not have roads in this particular country. So this is one network that we truly need to focus on and make sure that we deal with the backlog that we have. But also, Chairperson, as a department, we have also realized that it is important that we focus on our own capacity to oversight, to have oversight over the entities, and that is why you would know that there is a process of reorganization of the department, including looking at the structure. Chairperson, I just want to give you an indication that we are very happy that we're moving forward with regards to the rolling stock, and Prasa, I'm sure, would have made the presentation. They have now been able to get the ROD from environment, which means that the stock turning for the factory can happen at any given time, our days allowing, and we would love to have the president or the deputy president to officiate over such an important aspect. But also, Chairperson, you would know that Prasa and Transnet are key instruments for us to be able to make sure that the AU's plans for South Africa to be the hub for rail, in particular in the rolling stock sector, I mean side, can be become a reality. So we're very excited that Trafa is doing the work that they need to be doing to get to the point where we could be able to contribute. So, Chairperson, with these few words, I just want to say thank you for having us here, and the DG would do the presentation, or one of his dirigents would be able to do that, but I'll hand over to the DG. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and Honorable Member. The budget we are presenting today is essentially the strategic plan and annual performance plan that we presented to this committee last month, only now expressed in financial terms. The budget for the current financial year is 53.3 billion and it grows to 59.3 billion in the outer year of the year. The bulk of the budget goes to road transport, about 21.6 billion. Rail transport, 15 billion, and public transport, 11.3 billion. The baseline budget has been reduced by 456.7 million in the current financial year, 709.8 million in the next financial year, and 361.8 million in the outer year of the MTF. Period. The most affected program is administration. Adjustments in ITP, roads, civil aviation, maritime, and traffic transport are fairly minimal. Approximately 97% of the budget goes to transfers and subsidies. And our view, however, is that if we want to effect radical and visible transformation, we need more allocation in public transport, in road infrastructure, and in the rail sector. The CFO will now make a detailed presentation.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. Thanks, Minister. Thanks, DG, and the members, my colleagues. As the DG and the Minister have already alluded to the presentation, I'll just get into the things of the day. The contents of the presentation, we'll go through the MTF budget summary of the program. We'll then show the major amendments to the MTF budget. So what we see is what the reductions have been. And between the past financial year, which is 14-15, coming into this financial year, which is 16, I must emphasize as well that this is an estimate of national estimate, because this committee must certainly pass it for it to be the budget. MTF budget. I'll then break it down into economic classification. Then we'll break it down into the program by economic classification, and we'll just give you a 10-year overview of what has happened since the year 8-9 up to the outlying year of 17-18, just to give you a sense of where we were then and where we'll be in 17-18. As the DG alluded earlier, the budget for this financial year would be the 15-16 financial year 53, which has grown from 48 billion to 48.7 billion. The majority of it, of course, had been in road transport and continues to be for a while, as rail transport is starting to also grow to cover up that space in line with the priorities of government. Administration is going to go lower as a result of the cuts, and as the DG said, ITP, civil aviation, maritime, and public transport. to bring the committee's attention to the fact that the understanding of how rail sits in the department must understand that that's part of public transport, because in all intents and purposes, that's what PRASA is for. So you must take it in that line. So you might want to add the rail transport to public transport to get a bigger one of what that would mean. The amendment to the budget, we start with the good news, which is that the baseline increases. But all those baseline increases are coming from the baseline decreases that we have. So it's just money that is being shifted out of one area of the budget to the other. There is an increase of about 155,500,000 on Moloto, followed by 460,000,000 in the 16-17 financial year, and we have 17-18 479,000,000. Take the recap model review. Take the recap, the money has just been moved out of what we used to transfer, to some household, into the review of the model. So there's a need to review that model, which is 55 million going up to 68 in the outlying year. Then there are baseline reductions, you'd see, left there by some run at 110 going to 150 in the outlying year. As we said, take the recap, a cut of 55, 346, and 342. Much more of that has gone to the road upgrade of Moloto. Compensation of employees has been cut, 27 in this financial year, going up to about 42. Goods and services budget cut by 16 million this year, going up to 41 in the outlying year. And the other bigger cut is on PRASA, 47, 51, and 53 in the outlying year. Proceeding to the other parts, adjustment to conditional grants. As you see, public transport infrastructure grant has been cut, 187, going up to about 303, then dropping back to about 179 in the cuts that we have. The rural roads asset management system grant is 921, going up to, that's just 921,000. About 1.4 million and about 782 in the outlying year. Conditional grants provinces, PRMG, there's been money that is going to be set aside for disaster funding. And PRMG baseline reduction has been 219, 320, and 213 in the outlying year. PRMG reprioritization of about 45 million going up to about 55. PTOG, serious concern that the minister has also alluded to, that is the bus subsidies, they are reducing instead of increasing, which is a major concern in the budget. So the total decrease in the baseline budget is 456 in the first year. The biggest cut being next year, that's 709. And you'd see that in 17-18, 361. These cuts are cuts of the MTF budget as it went, but in general terms, our budget has been growing. So I then refer the budget cuts that 53.3 billion into economic classification. Compensation of employees is at 378 million. Goods and services about 682, and we've got transfer and subsidies at 52.2 billion rand, and we've got a smaller portion of about 4 million that is payment to property houses. As we have alluded earlier, 96.7% of the total budget goes to the following, which is SANRAL, PRMG, RAMS, PRASA, PTOG, PKNG, and the others are in the smaller areas, and including included in that would be, of course, our entities that we transfer to that as mono. Administration budget also cut down by economic classification. The biggest chunk goes to goods and services. You see that it was 233 in the previous financial year, 14-15. For the 15-16 financial year, it drops to 197.7 million. Compensation of employees has decreased a little. And you see that also the payment of capital assets has decreased relatively as well. So in this financial year, we've got 383.4 million allocation. Major projects, of course, is the budget where all the support functions are included, including the ministry and the DG's office, the COO and the CFO's office, and all the others that are related to that. We'll go to the next, which is integrated transport training program 2. The compensation relatively the same, with the services slight decrease, but it's also relatively the same. The biggest project that are under that is National Transport Master Plan, the White Paper National Transport Policy, and the FAIR, which is what I had again referred to as the whole for the post regulator. I'm glad to say they are part of that process. Raising it here, I don't know why they did, but they're part of the process. I'm sure they're just scared of change. Change sometimes is a difficult thing. We go to program 3. That's where you see the biggest increase. As I said, you must read this with program 7, because when you want to add public transport, you must see it from that side. The rail area, the rail public transport area, really, I mean, the transfer and subsidies, you'll see. Last financial year, 14.9 billion. This year, 18.2 billion. Shows a big ramp up. Serious consideration. You can see that even compensation of employees has not dropped that much in goods and services budget, because that's an area of focus for us. The major projects in that area are National Railway Policy, the National Railway Safety Regulator Amendment Bill, and the development of economic regulation for the rail sector, and the facilitation of the approval of the Bright Line Strategy in line with rail modification. The next one, we just give you a breakdown, just generally, of what in the main BRASA receives and how it's broken down into operational subsidies of 3.6 billion. That main line is about 448 million that goes to that. So you see that the total of that operational is about 4.06 billion rand. You will see that the capital subsidy, the capital subsidy plus capital contribution for rolling stock, fleet renewal, and signaling, and all those, that was 14.15 billion rand. Next slide. We just wanted to give an indication of how, over the past 10 years, starting from 8-9, how the budget has grown, especially the capital budget for BRASA. You will see that we started at about 5.4 billion rand. We'll go up to about 20.2 billion in the outline year, showing a massive, massive increase and showing where we have been spending most of our money and where we are going to contribute to spending. The next is the road sector. The minister has already alluded to the challenges we have in that front. You see that the transfer and subsidies does grow, but if you compare it to rail, for instance, it doesn't grow to that extent. And as we said, this is a co-funded mandate. It needs that program that must assist us in doing that. If you looked at the review provincial budget by the national treasury is very clear that I think the only case that spent more money is in roads and all the others are taking money away from me. And we have said that as we give more money, we'd expect people to then also contribute at that level. For them to be able to access that money, we need to ensure that that happens. So that grows to about 22.6 billion. You are even saying rent for rent. We were lower than that. Yeah, we're saying, I think we're talking about we're talking about a split of about 60-40. We're saying if we give them 60, they must bring 40 for every rent. So that we don't create bigger problems for them. But as you see in the road sector as well, there's not been a big decrease in goods and services and compensation, because that's also our focus area. The major projects there, white paper on road policy, construction and maintenance of national position roads, monitors, the ARGO amendment bill that is going to be submitted to cabinet and coming in processing, and the excess road development plan that we must have for especially municipalities and in rural areas especially for excess roads. And that as well, we thought that we might just break down that amount of what we transferred to SANRA. You'll see that the operational subsidy is about 3.9 billion and the capital budget is at 8.5 billion thereabouts. So you see that that's where the most of the money should be spent by SANRA. Then the roads, we thought that might give you a sense of how it has been growing as a budget. SANRA is growing very well, between 4 billion that we had in 8-9, growing up to about 14 billion. That's about 10 billion increase in the SANRA budget. Heroes, CRMG, the same 3.3 billion starting in 8-9 and growing to about 10 billion in the outlying year. So very, very sharp increases in our budget. The next one is civil aviation. This is quite a smaller portfolio that we have, mainly because some of these entities are self-funding by themselves, and you see that the transfer and subsidies there is quite small, but it is growing rather than reducing as well. You see that there has not been a bigger shift or cut in this area. The major projects are the AXA and ATMS amendment bills and the National Civil Aviation Policy and the SACA amendment bill and then the National Airport Development Plan and those air services agreements that we have in line with the UMOSO growth decision. Following that is the maritime area. You see that transfer and subsidies also quite small in comparison, and you see that there has not been a big decrease as well in compensation of employees. The expectation is that there is going to be, through the budget process, a point at which we are going to move money into that area, especially in support of Pakistan and in support of this area as it is becoming also a focus area. So the major projects there are white paper on maritime transport policy, cabotage policy for coastal, regional and continental waters, merchant shipping deal and the maritime charter. So that's on civil aviation methods, sorry, maritime methods. Public transport. An area of major concern for around my right here. On my left here. For us, it continues to be an area of concern.
Remember earlier on the fighter didn't know which one is right.
Oh. It looks like the disease is contagious. So there we've got about 11 billion, and the concern is that it doesn't grow that much. But if you then take that and merge it with the rail, you'll see that there's been bigger growth on public transport. The worry is what the minister is raised to say. If you look at taxi recap, it has been cut, but most people are on taxi, so that creates a bit of a distortion in the budget to going forward, which is something that is being discussed between the Department of National Treasury and all the other stakeholders. You see that the goods and services budget grows a bit, and this is as a result of that issue around the model of tax recap that needs to be dealt with. So the major projects in that area, as the minister has already alluded to, National Land Transport Policy, National Land Transport Amendment Bill, the Rural Transport Strategy, tax recap review, as I've already alluded, that's what the change there, the bigger change in the goods and services, and the integrated public transport turnaround plan that needs to be submitted to cabinet in this financial year. The most interesting slide as well is the next one that deals with public transport. You see that we have added PRA because we want you to see the whole total. We had been contributing to the housing in 8, 9, 3.2 billion, which has then since discontinued from 12-13. The PRASA budget, as I said, has grown. CTOG has grown, but not to the extent that we would have wanted to see, because the services have increased, but the amount has not grown that much. The taxi, fairly, relatively small compared to the whole capital budget or subsidy budget, as you were, and you see that it has been cut over the period. As I said, much more of the money has been moved to the Mloto area. PTIS and PTMG, it has grown from about 3 billion in 08-09, and you can see that it will grow to about 6.6 in the outlying year, meaning that it is almost doubled as well. But it's an area that also still needs to be looked at, and more resources need to be moved into that line. What I thought we'd do is just to give a sense of the 10-year expenditure overview. As the minister has already alluded, 8-9, you see we had about 28.1 billion. We have grown, the budget is now on the 17-18 going to be around 9.3 billion. So that's a big, big jump. You see it quite nicely when you look at this graph. That shows you very clearly that the department has grown. The only cut I think was in 11-12 of about 5%, but generally our budget has been on a positive growth level. The issues that we are raising was, given the amount of resources that have gone, what are the issues that we see as this translated really into deliverables on the ground? And we think that yes, to the extent, but not as enough as we would like to see. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, CFO, Minister DG, any other, before I give to honorable members?
Just an education chairperson. The Director for Civil Aviation, Ms. Potikoza, has been appointed elected the chair of AFSEC globally. And South Africa has always also been given the responsibility in the AU to chair the working group, the ministerial working group on Yamoussoukro decision implementation and the establishment of the Central African air transport market. So from the civil aviation side, South Africa is given key responsibilities, but also, like I said earlier on, Transnet and FASA have been identified as key anchors for the rail hub that the AU actually entrusted on South Africa through the PIDA, but also that South Africa is expected to give direction on many of the other matters related to infrastructure development over and above those that you've been working on, like your MSC and others. So I thought I should close off with those particular type of indications. So we are also appealing to members of the portfolio committee to help us lobby the countries that have not declared and subscribed to the solemn commitment done by the heads of state at the AU in January to open their sides for the implementation, to subscribe to the Yamoussoukro decision in the open sides agreement. So we believe that working through parliamentarians, we could also, through the Pan-African Parliament, speak to our counterparts to engage with their government to make sure that they can commit to that. There's a lot of potential with regard to that. The study the AU has done indicates that if only 12 countries can agree, then we stand a chance to open up air travel market for 5 million Africans, but also create the necessary jobs and the industries. There is a research that was done by Boeing that indicates that the growth in the air travel market is going to be focused in the African continent. So it is important that when that growth happens, we are not found wanting, like it happened with the mineral mining revolution. So this is another revolutionary step that we have a chance as the African continent to drive and actually be the agenda or trendsetter. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I think it is befitting to congratulate the minister and the department on the massive task that they will be doing in Africa, and particularly for the African Union. A round of applause, madam. Honourable members, the presentation from the Department of Transport, are the papers. I said earlier on that it looks like your brains have turned into cabbages. And I'm going to push you to make sure that you do the work. There's no one who must sleep here. Honourable Sibande, Honourable Mulaudzi, Honourable Teko, Honourable Bushielo, Honourable Samataka.
Thank you, Chetakon. Thank you, Chetakon. I will try not to be long. Of course, we are tired. Chetakon, but there is a thing which is worrying me, maybe if we can get some highlights. I was worried when the minister spoke about the thing that this subsidy is going to the province, this PRMG, the stand last term, there was a huge amount of money which was returned back to the department. So my question is that what's wrong with the department doing in order to make sure that some of this amount which is deployed to the province is being utilized in a correct manner? Not as physically done. And then also, Minister, my concern with the opposition to care. You see, it's now a long time about this issue of the tax repair. Then, my worry is that I don't know where is the stumbling block or what the range can be brought on board to make sure that this thing comes to an end. Because now is now a long time. I think it's some of the things we have done with some of the entities. I'll put my case there on the table.
No, thanks, Chairperson, and greetings to the Honourable Minister. I have only one question which I want to be clear about the taxi. cut of 55 minutes. Because last time we had strike in the country, Jackson Camp has a challenge of people reluctant to submit their checks because of the amount that so when you are cutting again the 50,000, are you going to deal, go away with the camp? Because we still see this unfit taxes on our roads which are killing people. And maybe to be updated about the recap program, is it? Well, because as you can see, until 2018, it's going to be that we are shelving it out. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me first start by welcoming the words by the minister, the ones of thinking about relooking at the fund model of the whole transport system, the issue of subsidies to bus operators versus the issue of taxi owners. What I'm saying so is that taxi owners, the taxi industry is the industry that's contributing a lot to job creation and whatever economy. And also that is contributing to the approach that we are following, the integrated transport system approach. The other issue of the grants, to provinces has already been alluded to. Chairperson, I'm tempted to say, Chair, sometimes at this time of the day, I don't talk numbers. What I'll do as my homework is to look at the presentation at home. We have a hotline with the department. Then whatever that I don't understand, I'll just pick up the phone and ask the question. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Jefferson, and thanks for the presentation. I think in terms of looking at the whole MTEP budget, I think it's fair. Suffice to say, I still believe that public transport is the heartbeat of the economy and we need to do more. So I'm not sure if the committee chair or can influence processes in order for us to assist the public transport. I'm very happy that at least we are implementing government decision about the people have been coming on and on. I'm happy that now it shows there's going to be a movement. And it seems now we do understand each other how we need to work. Thank you on that. The issue of the tax recapitalization, I want to be clear whether the 55 million is it for the review or is it including the subsidy of some kind or something, or is it for service providers to just do the report? I just want to get clarity on that. And then also from the department side, surely when you do that, you should be having some draft model. I don't know the correct website, but ideally, what do you want to see? Because we've been doing this for long, so surely you know where we need to go. The other issue is the issue of bus subsidy, Minister. Yes, it's a very serious issue because even the current operators, they are supposed to take more passengers but not getting more. As a result, you see the aging vehicles. 2 years, 3 years down the line, they're going to collapse and the whole system will collapse. So I think it's urgent that we deal with the issue to say, while we building new models and coming out with new ways of means of public transport, let's not kill the little that we have until we have some investment in them. I'm just worried that, you know, with the buses that you see, you can see most of them, you know, they should have been retired, but they are providing essential service. So it's still our problem. We need to really take it by the way. I don't have any solution, but that's the reality. And the other issue on the taxi recap, while you are reviewing the public transport turnaround, house parties. I think the elephant in the room still remains, which I think you maybe are taking it in the NMT amendment, the permit and the operating license issue. We might not talk about it now because the citizens are quite fatigued. It's the reason why we don't see our recap, you know, being realized very quickly. You know, the 7-year issue, the capital issue, the subsidy issue. So that's why I'm saying we need to have that trust. Idea, it might not be the policy or what, but so that we can be able to start the conversation. Otherwise, we are going to start the conversation when the pressure is already on us. So we might want to be proactive, you know, and start flicking these important strategic issues outside. You know, our country now is volatile, even on small things, you know, people just destroy all over. So some of the things that we can, we might not have the solution now, but let's start those important conversations to our key stakeholders, you know, getting some ideas. Otherwise, we'll have a problem. And then the last one, Chair, I have many other things, but I think we'll discuss them, you know, outside, which I think should be done. But we must always know, I'll always be biased to public. The last one, maybe the minister should help us on this one. I've seen a statement that there is a large scale of fraud in road accident fund. You know, because we are expecting us to approve this budget, which some of it will go to RAF for sure. It's not going to, no, but also the Minister of Finance has made some allocation. I'm just talking about, because it's the NTC reports to you at the end of the day. And I'm saying that I saw a statement, Minister, that there is a large scale fraud in RAF. And RAS came and presented to this committee on Friday, this past Friday. And we were never alerted by the department about this until we get it now in the media. So maybe the minister can give us some light, because as we go out of the room, we want to understand what is going on. I think we are in the dark. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Damashaka.
No, thank you, Honourable Chair and Minister. Just the following colleagues with the line of question. The, I know it's late in the day, but I'm not sure if I'm trained up. The question for me, Chair, in terms of this issue about the public transport issue, that's the bigger discussion, and I don't know how where they meet. So the issue of public transport, whether we talk about bus subsidy, whether we talk about the tax recap, whether we talk about the rail, where they meet at the integration level and the resource allocation to it. For an example, the taxi review process. And the reallocation of the money from the taxi into local development. So one is not sure in terms of has the review already informed the action of the reallocation of the money from the taxi recap into Moloto corridor? Or what informs the other? Last time we had a discussion with the DDG responsible, we said we'll come back to that discussion because it's a long discussion around the review. I worry with it is that I don't know, because in the next 3 years, if you look at the slide, it's going down to 68, which means there is no plan to come back in dealing with that particular aspect. At the same time, one doesn't see how that review fits into a broader, either broadened or beaten or change of mode of transport from the taxi industry into the mainstream. Now, if you talk to 65% that is committing to taxi and the budget and how we move forward in the next 3 years, we don't necessarily demonstrate that we may have a challenge in managing the whole thing about integration. That takes me to my city or the Avaya or the 13 major city transport issue. That issue, the concern that is raised the last time is still that by and large is excluding the smaller operators in the form of minibus taxis. So, Chair, I don't know whether you understand my difficulty, but I'm just raising that, the flagging the issue that is a bigger discussion. So, I think that the next, we may find that later the taxi is completely excluded from the main, including in terms of how we address them in terms of the resources. Because if you lose the resources, you're not easily going to get it and invest it into it. So that's just my dilemma if I'm looking at how the budget's been shifted in terms of the minibus taxis and the issue of public transport as a first policy issue. The second issue for me, Chair, while I'm on that issue, would be the strategy around the bus subsidy issue. These two, we had some conversation which was not complete with the department about what is the exit point? And what is the exit point and integrating point with the addressing the small operators, bringing them into the mainstream of the economy? At what point? I think there's been some preliminary discussion that there is a way to do it. But Minister, I must say that if I listen and I look at how the budget is put forward, I'm not sure at what point we're going to be able to reclaim or recover from that discussion. I see, I must say, that if we drive it this way, we're going to slide back into the old system of skewed public transport into subsidy aspect. So maybe the department can respond to that, because I there's three things. Then the issue about the, I think my colleague has already raised the issue about this grant, and the grant for the that is given to municipality in terms of our provinces. Well, the last time we spoke about it, there was an MOU issue about whether the money is spent for the purpose in which it's intended for. That MOU was more or less outside of DORA arrangement. That even though there's a DORA, there is still a concern that money is not quite spent for what purposes. For example, City of Cape Town. Lots of money doesn't actually go into that, it goes into something else. Something else is consultancy, and consultancy that has been years, imported consultancy. So when you look at the actual spending around that issue, it's also the department said no, there is the MOU outside of the DORA that we're now entering into with the 13 cities so that we are able to spend money for the purpose. Now, of course, here we don't quite see that, because we're talking strictly the money, that particular aspect in terms of managing. What is the plan for taxi assistance program going forward? That's the short question I'm asking. Maybe you can help me understand it. And of course, others are really small questions for me in terms of asking it. But I think the bigger questions for me, it is this one. And I think that it's going to be important, because the minister is a carrier of the policy and the direction that will help us understand about the thinking of the next 3 years with this particular aspect. But I see the next 3 years in terms of the budget and strategy going down. And I don't know whether this properly consulted in that particular industry. It may well be a backfiring curveball that comes into it.
Thank you very much, Honorable Ramakrishna. And I think from what where you left, for me what becomes very critical is the minister, I'm very happy that at least you've got a business unit in the department that will be overseeing public entities. It's a very critical one. Within the same breath, for sure, you may want to say
the grants that have been allocated to the municipalities, to the provinces, to whether it's bus subsidies and all those things, obviously, do we get them for money? Because as I we know, talking from the province where I come from, you know very, very well, I don't need to talk about other provinces, the challenges that have been there. That you give money for maintenance of roads, then you see a lot of wonders in terms of filling of potholes and stuff like that. Do we get? Do we really get value for money? And to, that I think we need to also think as to what is it that we can be able to put in place. Does the business unit that is there, can it be able to do oversight and be able to really say quantifiably so this is the money that has been utilized, indeed these are the things. But I think in the last meeting where we're discussing some of these things, as Honorable Ramatakan has indicated, was obviously the resigning of MOUs, whatever service level agreement, whatever we say in that regard. Can we be able to say that we are really doing, we are able to get value for money in this process, holistically and truly speaking? But as has been indicated with the bus subsidies, you know, when we met with the Muloto whatever committee, there was a lady there who said the buses, some of the buses, not only Pasco, they are like weather. When it rains, they rain. When it's cold, they are cold. When they're traveling on the dusty road, there is dust inside the bus, an indication of something which actually is found wanting and very challenged. How do we integrate all these things? Because we're looking for an integrated transport in the whole country. We're busy putting money into BASA to say expand in terms of rail. We would want to see the taxis because they ferry a lot of people. Also them being assisted because they are also saying we need to be subsidized just like the bus operators are being subsidized. And the bus operators actually, when you look at the subsidies that are there, and I'll talk about Limpopo probably and part of Mpumalanga, it's not every bus subsidy, it's not every bus operator that gets subsidized in this regard, such that how do we make sure that we're able to really deal with this in a very holistic manner, which actually, before the pressures come on to us, we're already saying this is how we want to see ourselves operating and making sure that at least our people don't get a raw deal all said and done. Earlier on in the morning, I think the committee minister, one of the things that they were making as a proposal was that autocad, probably maybe as part of trying to ease off the pressures in some of the other areas, may want to think in terms of, fortunately, CRBTA was here being licensed into doing some other work in that regard, but also look into going into the rural areas. You spoke about about the scholar transport, and I think this is one other challenge that will be coming as that besides funding, you're going to be faced with a challenge of the infrastructure that will be there, because when you look at the whole question of scholar transport, you're looking at particularly the farming community. You're looking at the rural areas where the schools are far from a residential area. So these, to me, are the things that we should be able to say, obviously. Let me say, Minister, the Department of Basic Education has got money for scholar transport.
in my other life, when I was trying to take scholar transport to the Department of Transport in basic education, you fight with a lot of people in that regard. Because somebody believes this is my freedom, and somebody believes that I've got an age after me, how do you now deal with this thing? But I know that money for scholar transport is there, not properly, it's management in that regard is where we are found wanting as government, and we need to look into how do we really manage that. Because it varies from province to province. In some provinces they've got tariffs which actually they coin in a particular way. In other provinces they will be having tariffs actually which ranges from taxis to buggies, you know, they allow buggies, they tariffs for buggies, tariffs for taxis, and stuff like that. So these are some of the things that we need to start zooming in and saying, already you've got the finances department of basic education. How do we now that the policy is here, let's look at what will be the shortages, let's look at the infrastructure in terms of transport, these learners, and for sure that is where the taxi industry will come in and be able to subsidize, because in many instances it is the taxis which actually are ferrying these learners to variety of schools, because coming from the farms, you would imagine it will be less than 20 learners, they don't need a bus. It will be less than 10 learners, a 16-seater will be fine, whatever, those kinds of things. So these are the things that we, as a Department of Transport, we really need to say, how do we make sure that in the end we are seen to be on top of our issues, we are seen to be on top of our game, and it doesn't become a ping pong like that. And I'm saying this because same couple, looking back, when you look at scholar transport, it's just like the school nutrition program. There are those who will be able to say, this is how we'd like to see the diet going towards our learners. Those who are saying, but we are you are going to be saying, we would like to see transport going like this and this and this. And then the other ones will also be saying, we've got the race. So that is why it becomes very, very important that as we now saying the policy is ready and available, we start to look into how are we going, implementation, how is it going to be done. And lastly, Minister, I would like to say, having interacted with RAF last week, it is just very unfortunate that I don't even want to engage into that, but it looks like as we're dealing with RAF, there were undercurrencies which were there, which actually we didn't even know. But it could have been very honorable for honorable members to say, but you, RAF, you're saying this and this and this. These are some of the things that we believe. You should be able to come and say publicly here in front of the committee. This committee is a public area where you are able to do some of these things. And what exactly is that we are missing as a committee? That or what exactly is it that the department is not telling us in terms of RAF? Because some of us when we interact and engage with RAF, we see good work coming out. We can see that there is value for money for the people of the Republic in essence. I know that I've met, interacted with several people who actually have been able to get value for money in terms of direct interaction with RAF in this regard. Thank you, Minister. I'm going to take it back to yourself to respond to all of our members.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think the bulk of the questions were related to public transport and the DDG is there. Let me respond to this one that was raised by Honorable Member Kodubushielo and Honorable Wafens Chairperson. The matters related to what we heard about the charges that have been laid against the Road Accident Fund. You know, Chairperson, it does seem like that there are some parties in this Parliament who, because they are not in government, would govern through the courts and through the police. In that way, actually transferring their responsibilities as public representatives to the police as well as to the courts. I have heard also through the media that there is a letter or something that will be written to me. I haven't received it, and I will wait on it. But I just want to say that, you know, it is true that dogs bark at a moving vehicle. The one that is standing there on bricks, they don't even see it as a vehicle. They'd rather go and pee on it. The Road Accident Fund has turned around, and the people of South Africa are seeing value in it. And I would believe that the honorable members who went to lay charges against the Road Accident Fund CEO and management with regards to what they say is a fraud and whatever that they believe is happening in the Road Accident Fund must be men enough or woman enough to acknowledge that there would be people who are dissatisfied in the way in which the Road Accident Fund is working. The Road Accident Fund has gone out to innovate the way it renders services. They have gone out to communities. And in fact, when we speak about the people who are not getting their claims, we don't know what they're talking about, because the Road Accident Fund has gone to more than 60 communities. And in that process have been able to facilitate payout of more than 800 million rand. The fact that there are people who have not been paid out is an indication of exactly what the Minister of Finance was speaking about. That the Road Accident Fund is a victim of its own success. They have processed more claims than what the money that they have can afford to give them. So they definitely have to wait till they have the money to be able to pay out. But they've also been able to deal with the backlogs of those claimants whose claims have been lying with the fund and the lawyers for many years. They've been able to process that, and those people are just waiting for the payment. In fact, as we speak, because of the efficiencies that they've been able to realize, you've got more claims that have been processed that are waiting for payment. And we should be happy that we do have the opportunity as government to have an organization that has actually been even given awards in the last year for innovation by the Public Service Innovation, Public Service Innovation, it's called Public Service Innovation. They've got that award. They also have the Transport Ministerial Award because of the interventions that they've been able to make. In fact, these very lawyers that go and complain are the ones that have been holding the hands of the agency to be able to serve the people better. How do you serve the people when your equipment, your furniture has been attached? Because that is what has been happening. On a daily basis, the Road Accident Fund furnitures have been and properties have been attached. But I would want to say to you, honorable members, that we believe that this is just part of a process to try and avoid the transformation process that we are working on transforming the Road Accident Fund from what it is today, the fund that is actually fault-based, to a no-fault basis in terms of the Road Accident Benefit Scheme. And as members of Parliament, we should be worried about the number of people whose money actually ends in a trust accounts of law firms that generate so much interest for them. Many of the law firms that have actually claimed to have closed, where you have situations where people have been paid out many years ago and they don't know what they have been paid out. Through the rough on the road, there's always a desk that deals with fraud and corruption, the forensics. In fact, Jefferson, it is so painful to stand there and hear people who come and say, I have had a claim for so many years, and when they get to the road accident fund on the road campaign program, then they are told that you were paid out so many years ago. It is so painful. We went now on Sunday the 12th as part of our Mbizo to Ekangala. It was wonderful to see a family of Masilela who said, we went directly to the road accident fund. And today I can say I am in a wheelchair because of a road crash, but I've got a house that I built with the money that I claimed from the road accident fund. I've got a house that has been configured to accommodate my disability. And these are the challenges that we have to be addressing. Just now the other day when we were in Ekangala, there were 38 funeral claims that have been lying around, not have been attended to, because of the road accident fund on the road initiative, the RAF on the road. They could pay out those 38 claims for about 60 million rand. These are the things that says, how do we serve our people better? How do we make it possible that people realize when we say Batopeli? Batopeli, that means that as a manager, you sit there and say, how do you get to serve people even better? We know that this court or a legal challenge is a challenge that is intended to delay the fast and the speed, or the fast moving initiative and the speed at which the road accident fund has been working. They've tried it with attachment of property. It has failed because even without desks and equipment, they could still serve the people. And I would want to say to those who believe that there's something wrong, there's nothing that prevents us to do the investigation, but it must be done in a way in which we understand what we're dealing with. The chairperson is correct. The road accident fund was here. It didn't mean meet you on Tuesday the next week to go and lay charges and to make a statement. These matters could have been raised and could have been clarified and then in that particular platform. So I just want to say to you, chairperson, that yourselves in the previous year and even the committee before you have showered accolades and praises on the road accident fund in the way in which they do their work, and even made recommendations on how to do the work even better. So I would believe that it is important that we continue along those lines to make it possible that we can continue serving the people of this country. There are members of parliament who have come as part of their constituency work with some of these backlogs in terms of payments. We've been processing and dealing with such matters, even with those that didn't have lawyers. And I just want to say that for me it is painful that we can sit here and be listening and getting reports, because in any case, some of this information, the 98 billion rand that is being seen as a fraudulent thing, is actually in the reports of the accident fund for over the many years as an actuarial liability. So I would believe that if members have been reading their report, if members have been engaging with the different engagement or platforms that have been created, we could have provided the answers. But well, that is a matter we will await the processes that the police as well as the courts would follow, and I believe that we will respond appropriately. But I am not protecting anybody, and I would want to say that myself and the Minister of Finance have agreed that we are going to be partners in terms of making sure that we can get this road accident benefit scheme through Parliament, I mean through the necessary structures from Cabinet through Parliament, and also make it possible that we can transform this agency. This is a long, outstanding process. You would know from 2002. Now we need to, for once, make sure that we turn it around. The number of people who have been engaged in road crashes, who are sitting because they don't have money, they don't have a what is it called, the ability to prove loss of income, who are destitute, will be best served by this transformed a road accident benefit scheme. So I just want to say to you, Jefferson, it is really worrying. This is the second time in a short space. Last week there was an open letter. This week is a statement that also addresses the issues that we could have been addressing as members of this parliament, but also as the ministry and the department to the portfolio committee. So I would want to say that, Jefferson, our commitment to work with the portfolio committee is being undermined by this type of action. Because we commit to work closely with the portfolio committee, and yet there are members who would want to do things differently from how the portfolio committee would want to work. Unless these members are telling us that they went to lay these charges on behalf of the portfolio committee. But I just want to say that for me it was a bit worrying that we could be able to see this particular type of tendencies. And also go even beyond that to say that the Minister of Finance is shielding the Road Accident Fund. I can understand it, but I just want to say I am embarrassed as a member of parliament, as a minister, that we can not use our avenues for engagement, but rather go and waste the time of the police, who have got better things to investigate in this country. Crime in these communities, we need to be able to read it, and now we want to bog down police with this and lengthy. They are going to take 10 years to conclude this investigation. Thank you very much.
DG? Anything? Oh, okay.
I'm sorry, because I know DG is supposed to respond. But I wanted to add something. Yes, ma'am. Chairperson, you know what? I've learned this thing in life, simply. Minister, these photos is part of the Road Accident Fund roadshow. The roadshows are not limited to a color or a party. People are invited. I mean, I'll talk on my constituents. These photos, Obafisa, and are these people they write about invited? This is not a secret. I'm not defending. Maybe the kind of Iraq was that recommended them positively. Maybe that is the crime. But if people challenge us on that regard, if they want us to support the Road Accident Fund, I will ask and pose the question, why in the past, when the Road Accident Fund was paid in dollars, there were people who were fabricating accidents here in South Africa. When they were paid in dollars, it was quiet. But if now the Road Accident Fund is paying direct, there is a crime. Even with the department, if we are asking questions, we are not fighting you, but we need something to correct. We need something to be done. That's why we are saying please ask in order to build you. But if there is a person wanting to cause destruction, take it on the street. We are there for you. Here's the witness. I've got lots of cases which I can bring as an evidence in my constituency where people were paid directly. Maybe that war of the lawyers or of the doctors who doesn't want to terminate their service. Minister, what how will my man go to? I'm not emotional. Let me go to. Yes. You know what, Minister? With those doctors, we support you. Start whatever and act. Chase them away. Expel them. That's all. Because they were benefiting out of the class of the people. For an example, I was really concerned. I was even invited with that kind of big British minister. It's not a secret, they invite anybody, but it depends on you how busy you are. If I'm failing to attend, if I didn't attend it, please, we must not, debate is coming.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Chairperson, for allowing me to
relax. Issues which have been raised, what is the CFO?
Most of them are traffic transport issues.
Okay. If you can, Mr. Kwanya.
Chair, thank you very much. We are told 98% of the budget goes to transport. Just like 98% of the person who came to public transport. Perhaps it needs to be supported to by some fuel lines, and we can make a difference. But really, on a very serious note, I think I'll just run very quickly, but Chairperson, this is what we said earlier on. Maybe when the Honourable Member, the committee, engages on the threat plan, which I saw somewhere, we need to be given better slot. I mean, really half a day to a full day, just so that we can come and talk public transport and why we really want to take public transport in the short, medium, and even the long term. And we'll talk to the majority of all issues. But also, just so that we share, because all of these things, we saw them coming and we see them coming. And really, to be honest, it is going really with the current investments and everything else, it is going the way the Honourable Members are saying. It is not improving, and it will not be improving. But the tax recap review, we did an internal review. This is the review that informed us that new vehicles are not affordable. Perhaps the scraping allowance that we pay, which was 50% when it started, is now about 18%. So it is becoming a gap between what we are paying and the money demanded for deposit itself. It's becoming too huge. We would want to therefore scientifically come to a conclusion of a new model for assisting the taxi. We looked throughout the country, especially in the professors, have a problem in writing about the taxi problem. I don't know. Maybe the South African problem. But it's burning also, yes, but also he stops at complaining. He doesn't provide solutions. But that is the purpose with the review. And it does not necessarily mean that this review will take 3 years. Even though there's allocation for the 3 years, the money, remember the issue of the money being reduced, it's not necessarily by us, but by Treasury, but it is based on the performance of the allocation. So the reality of the matter is that there are no longer enough people coming to bring the account. Now, we would not of necessity didn't want to lose this money, because we want to take this money into the public transport subsidy, whose focus will be the commuter, not the operator, irrespective of the mode and everything else. But then, our target would be there for the commuter. We're trying to find a way of how we want to deal with it. Unfortunately, it has always been that case. The only difference was that the money goes via through the operator to benefit the commuter. The operating licenses permit problem, as we are doing the turnaround plan, changing legislation, we are now moving it onto the e-Nexus platform, because we realize that even with these challenges, e-Nexus is one of the most safest and secure systems. But also the double entry of information. See, what you put in is what you get out. Now, if you put an ID number, somebody comes and says, why is it different on the operating license and on the e-Nexus? Now, we want single entry, so we are going to use the e-Nexus platform, not the whole entire system, or creating a field, so that this cross-reference within the system to verify the vehicle, the engine numbers, and everything else, and the owner and IDs of the operators and the owners of the vehicle. There is very few instances where E-Nexus is down, unlike the NLC So we will deal with the issues of downtime in terms of the system's performance. But we'll also deal with the speed, because again, like I said, there would be double or multiple entry or inputting onto the system. It will be at a similar point. We are very hopeful that this TRP review might normally taken from TRP, when we have the TISIP, the integrated transport turnaround plan, which will include definitely and is going to include the taxi plan, because of the integratedness of how we want to approach things. This money, because it's also been taken onto road maintenance, road rehabilitation on the road, the widening and the maintenance and the later storage, which all of them are once of thing. And with Treasury has promised that this money will come back. They need us to finalize the so-called taxi plan. And then we are likely to get the money in the outside. If you look at the outside, it's already the reduction is becoming minimal. And the contracts, not the projects, the contracts coming to an end in March 2016. We have no appetite to go into a similar type of contract because it is not performing. The review will tell us how we go forward. We have got ideas of mainstreaming smaller bus operators and taxis into mainstream public transport. We already have pointers and ideas for bringing up that turnaround plan. But on the day that we discuss public transport, we will take you through all of the work that we are doing and everything that we know about the problems, even within the bus subsidies themselves, where they started and why. And how can we go around? Well, unfortunately, all of these things, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, will depend on how far the state is willing to go in terms of subsidizing commuters or public transport users. Even the FSC are saying you need 2.5 times the current level of investment into public transport to get it right. And that plan talks to a differentiated approach to different types of systems. I always tell people, and I really want to repeat it, I'm sure I've also said it, where I come from, Hamadishan, they don't want the RT. They want a decent quality public transport. They do not necessarily go into an expensive system that will not be used for most time of the tour. And this is the South African problem of two peaks, one in the evening, one in the morning, one in the evening, and nothing or very little happening in between. That's the reality. You wouldn't of necessity invest into expensive systems like BRTs and stuff to be able to service that kind of a market. The mainstreaming, the whole issue of the integrated transport system, to mainstreaming. Even if I were to share some of the things that are coming out of that study or the proposed plan, is an appropriate vehicle for appropriate volumes of people and appropriate distance. That is where we are going. But I must indicate, really, as much as I'm bashing a little bit of the BRC system, the whole idea, and this is what we are insisting when we provide them with money, is that if the BRC system is going to run over services that are currently being performed, those current operators, whether they are taxis, small bus operators, or formal buses, they must form part of the new system. So this is why, where and how we are insisting. We hear issues of other people being to change, but we're looking at it. So an ERT system, the operations and the stations are wholly owned by the taxis. 100%. I think the challenge and the test is to whether they will be able to then run and those things that we've given to them optimize. And of course, we are looking very, very closely and monitoring it to ensure that we would be able to offer assistance if needed. We've already seen a problem in that one. When they were given the operations and the stations and stuff, they did not necessarily withdraw taxis on the same line. Now their taxis are competing with their own business, which is a matter which, if we intervene, we can optimize. That is the main reason why those buses are not running at capacity. And the BRT system, because of the level of investment, it needs to be always be fully fast. People in, people out, people in, people out, all the time are along the corridor for something like 16 hours a day. Well, the issues around autopacks, we had about them. The good news is that I think even from France, they have got, for lack of a better word, an appetite to operate into unserviced areas. Is that that what I heard them saying, is that even in the scholar transport space, they said that they run a business. They run a business, they would want to be compensated. But it's something that we can start pursuing with them. We are really, because of this challenge, the problem, the shortfalls in the subsidy, seeing withdrawal of bus operations into some roads. I think the likes of autopilots should just be on guard to be able to come into those spaces. There's been having some few buses that have not been operating. Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Even if we can respond in writing, the issues are just so many. I've added 77 issues, 77 issues today. We really need that workshop. Thank you.
CFO, you don't have anything to say?
Maybe it's for another day that the DGG speaks about for us to really interrogate the issue that are flagged. Because from where I'm standing, the issues are not very new, are old issues. And for the Mac of Better term, the issue about the treasury, the spending and non-spending and redirecting the money. We did say that the last time we engaged last year about this particular, the whole thing about the recap issue. So there are old issues in that sense. But you know that my worry, Chair, let me just put my worry in this, is that by the next, in the next 3 years, 2018, when the 3 year cycle runs in the process of the review, and this has an implication in terms of where we're taking the transport sector to. So I'm just flagging that the 3 years, I'm worried about the 3 years. I must say that. But we'll do this for maybe for another day. Let's have that workshop. What is a full day? I would think the full day maybe should be a better workshop. Because we need to really tease out some of the issues. You see, DDG, my city is now operating Cape Town Atlantis. Original structures that are on the route are not part of it. It's at the same competition in the same group, but my city is running. It's assisted by government, and alongside it is a taxi that is running. And I'm making an example about Atlantic Route, and I can go on the list making this example. That is why we were saying there must be a forced integration. The policy must direct that You can't, it's not a matter of you doing it when you like. This is a formula, and that formula must inform what you do in terms of the transformation. Now, the same, now we're going to have a tension between. Recently, there was a conflict that we had to go and intervene in Atlantis. Taxi operators want to focus their anger on the bus. Now, buses communities transporting people who are going to work. Because they now look at what their income is and versus the bus and their capacity, and they spark off the tension. So I'm just saying that all those issues are issues for this workshop that we need to do. But it's more worrying when you see that. But let me leave it there for the next day that we must have a discussion.
Thank you, Honorable Ramakrishnan. I think it will be important, members, that we collate information that we believe when we go into the workshop we have sent to the department, so that they are able to have a thorough preparation in terms of the workshop that we are envisaging to engage into, particularly on integrated transport, because that is one of the key drivers of the economy, social issues, socio-economic issues, environmental issues. We talk about any other thing in terms of issues of transport. We believe that this is what will be able to move South Africa forward. Minister, your last word before we adjourn this meeting.
Chairperson, thank you very much for this opportunity. As a department, we have heard what you say, and as usual, we are always encouraged and by the enrichment that we get from the input of the members of the portfolio committee. And like I did at the beginning, we continue committing to work together with the portfolio committee to make sure that we can truly take South Africa forward. And in particular, making sure that we can build infrastructure for transportation of the people of South Africa, but in also including freight in South Africa. And I would want to say to you, we are working closely with all our entities to make sure that as Team Transport, we can deliver on the mandate of a better life for all the people of South Africa. In this period where we believe that working in line with what the National Development Plan espouses us to do, and the Freedom Charter also, you remember, Chairperson, that the Freedom Charter was drafted 60 years ago, and we can't amend it. We need to make sure that we implement the tenets of the Freedom Charter in making it possible that the people of South Africa can feel the impact of their participation in the governance system. We believe that this we can do with your support, and I'm happy that one of the members indicated that if need be, you can also be our partners in engaging with Treasury and the other relevant stakeholders to make sure that the resources we need to deliver on our mandate are available. I want to commit the team to making sure that we can deliver on our mandate and deliver on the objectives that we have set ourselves for this particular year, and I want to say, watch this space. We are ready. We want to make sure that the people can be very proud of the Department of Transport that delivers for South Africa, because we truly, literally, and figuratively must take South Africa forward, and we are ready for that. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Minister. Thank you very much, DG and your team. Honorable members, it's been a long and tiring day. The meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much for your participation. Thank you.